Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Coming to you from the lounge again. It's just, felt like it's always better lighting. Felt like getting out of the house. So tonight's episode is going to be a listener request. And I'd had this request. It's from a friend of mine, very close friend of mine. I'm near and dear to. And she said, you know, you should do a video about this phenomenon about people wanting to be right all the time. And her and I've discussed this at length. And it just has to do with that when that situation and when social media came online, we started to show our inner psychosis. I talked about this in my Facebook episode, the reasons why you post, right? The couple that posts all the time and say, somebody loves me. Look, I'm okay. Somebody, like, you don't know me, but this person loves me and look how pretty they are. So I'm cool. The people that constantly post, my life is better than yours. With those two posts, you will have, if you were to eliminate all those posts out of social media on all platforms, I'm willing to bet that more than 60% of all the posts in the world would simply vanish. And I think that the number one species left would be, I'm right and you're wrong. And it's a tough one, right? Because at some points you see people, we got a bunch of people who are asleep in the world. And we've done our research, at least enough, to find enough smoking guns and whatever subject matter we're talking about to know that they can't keep their history. That's one category of it all. Then we have sort of the ultra-subjective subject matter, you know, who's bad, who's good, very specific things like abortion, and these ultra-polarizing things, whether or not, you know, it's absolutely hilarious. Even though socialism has failed in every single experiment on Earth, these people still think, without any deep thinking about the postmortems on all these countries that failed, we can just start it back up again. And Cortez, with her single-digit IQ, is going to be right there on the forefront, leading the charge and getting it right. But I think before social media came out, of course, this whole thing about being right has been around forever, right? I gotta stop saying right after every thing I say. But where did it come from? What's the genealogy of this feeling of we want to be right such that other people are wrong? It's almost like you don't have the full high of the moment unless someone is proven wrong by you being right. It's a really strange thing. Well, let's think about a caveman, primal being, getting something right. We see it in monkeys. We see it in all kinds of different species on this planet. They get elated when attempting over and over and over again fails. And then boom, oh, the acorn falls. Bam, I got it. And now every time I come back to this bird seed thing or whatever, I can always take as much as I want. Now in the wild, it's pretty interesting because unless a wild animal is interacting with a new object that man has made that must be deciphered by the animal, it looks like all the animals and insects have got it totally figured out. They know where to eat. They know what their prey is. They know what the prey on them is composed of. They know where to get their food. They know where to migrate. It's been millions and millions of years of whatever they are. It's ironed out. But man, oh, we're the dominant species. We're the tool maker. And therefore, we create brand new challenges, brand new truths. And so we have this dilemma. Every single one of you can remember being a child and you are alone for whatever reason. You're in your room, you're in your crib, you're playing around with your toys, you're trying to figure something out. Remember the first toy that taught cognitive sciences to a child? It was a little workbench with all the different shaped holes. And then you had a peg that had the cross-section of that particular design, the circle, the square, the pentagon, whatever, the hexagon. And you pounded them through, the star, all that crazy crap, maybe a half moon or something. And boy, when you figured it out, you felt amazing. The donuts that you lined up on that little donut spindle, you're supposed to put the biggest one at the bottom to get the tallest one or narrowest one at the top. It felt amazing. Now, we as human beings have lost this, for the most part, in the modern world, this understanding of having to go out, hunt for your food, potentially lose one of the village, potentially get bitten, come back wounded, lose a limb, whatever. We've lost all the reality of what it takes to actually survive on this planet because we've managed to create processes where we raise livestock and we don't necessarily have to eat a lion, right? So we don't have to mess with them. They just sit out there in the Sahara by themselves, right? Or I should say safari. But what happens when you do it by yourself? You get something right by yourself. You feel absolutely empowered to repeat that step as much as you want to entertain yourself. And that's pretty much, before we learn the other formula, that's where it stays. And then, if your parents are sort of cool parents and you do some things correct in front of them, they know that positive reinforcement is how you get a child to behave. When they do something that you don't want them to do, you offer nothing. If they do something that would normally have hurt them, maybe you pat their diaper and let them, hey, don't do that, right? No touch. All right, I love you. But when they do something great, they get a straight A, or they get A on a test, they go to potty for the first time and take care of all the mess. Boy, that's a moment where you give some super accolades. That's where it starts. I did something right, and I got a reward. Man, that feels good. It's the dopamine triggers in your brains, in your brain, that gives you that gambling algorithm, that sort of reward mechanism. And so that sort of stays in your local ecosystem until you're about 5 or 6, and then you start venturing out into the world, right? And then you do something that perhaps really helps some people. And now the outside public gives you the accolade. They see you've done an amazing job. And now you feel even better. It's even better than the accolade you got from your parents. Have you ever had a situation where you, again, some of you are really close to your parents and this still works and God bless you, you're very fortunate, but you need an accolade outside of your parents? You know, I was pretty bored of my parents, you know, compliments at a young age. And they weren't even that, they weren't crazy with it. They didn't say it every time it happened. But there was just something about getting it outside of my parental units because I thought, well, my parents have to like what I do. It's almost a subconscious thought. No one really says it to your face, but you get that feeling, right? When you get it from outside your family, it feels better, doesn't it? A lot of times, at least. So that starts to become it's a little bit different than a psychological one with yourself or the very small socialistic experiment with your family. It becomes a much more global socialistic thing where you're outside and you're with the entire world. And, you know, quite frankly, you can make a video on YouTube and prove up is down and down is up. And if you do it, all these people rush in and, man, you're a star. And even if most of the world doesn't believe in what you're saying, maybe 1 million people give you a thumbs up and say, you are a freaking genius. I never realized that. And they proceed to spill their coffee all over themselves. But where does it cross that acidic line? That acidic line where you go, I'm going to feel so much better telling someone else that they're wrong. And when you first get into this, and I'm almost certain that I'm guilty of probably every single gradient of this sin on man in my youth, I think, you know, being inside Usenet discussion boards or whatever. I think I can remember one time when I actually wrote almost as a tongue-in-cheek method, but I'm sure it was read a different way. You know, someone was saying something, I can't remotely remember what they were talking about, but I wrote the word wrong, you know, in all caps, comma, and said something else, you know. Reprehensible behavior by yours truly. And this close friend of mine, she was the one that got me to wake up to that pattern in myself and others. And so it's been instrumental in me becoming a better human being. But what is it? Why do we have to dominate someone else? Well, I'm going to take a stab at this. I think that the very first time that we feel passionate about telling someone else that they're wrong is because deep, deep down, in our heart of hearts, before we grow up and realize that there's other perspectives on things, we believe someone is categorically wrong about something. And not only categorically wrong, but it has a little catalyst on top of that. We think that if anyone else follows their advice or believes the way they believe, that they will hurt others. I hate to give examples in some cases. We have a real easy one. For me, I think that anyone who promotes climate change is a person incapable of doing research, extremely gullible, completely asleep, definitely not woke, has no idea what the word oligarchy means, globalism, the problem-reaction-solution formula. I personally believe the research that says that this is going to be a carbon taxation system to hinder procreation on this planet, turning it into an absolutely draconian, Orwellian, THX1138 world. Okay, most of you have seen my episode on global warming, which they haven't demonetized yet. Pretty hilarious. So I don't use the H word on that one. But now, what am I actually doing if I engage this faux pas that we're talking about? I go in and I very cockily, I guess there's a word for that, get in there and tell someone off. You fucking idiot. Da-da-da. Don't you know this is papa? Your children are going to suffer. Wow. An acidic person showed up, left a sentence that, regardless of it's giving you the cure to cancer, no one's going to want to read that. And they're going to think you're a completely immature, incapable person of debating well. And I want to give some props out to, again, the folks in our locked Facebook group. You guys are and gals are truly first-class human beings, because the way you guys converse with each other. And I know that what's beautiful is like we've got round earth and flat earth people living in harmony. And everyone laughs at each other's jokes. It's like someone says, you think it's flat, but this is obviously round thing, and this is round, and obviously it's flat. I mean, it's just beautiful. Everyone lives together. It's awesome. It's kind of a daily example of how well things can be worded. And I learned just by reading your words how not to do this, right? So I think that one of the tipping points is we truly do honestly believe that there's a problem here, that the other person is representing heresy. Now, let's pierce and divide heresy a little, at least into two sections. One of them might be something that we believe to be very scientific. Again, when the head meteorologist at MIT said that the percentage of CO2 in the atmosphere was 0.054% of a single percent of all the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, we know he's talking about literally nothing. And that's all of it. And then when you take out the 2.5%, which is the high estimate of what man contributes to that infinitesimal amount, then we realize there's nothing to worry about. We can go ahead and clean up the world, get rid of oil, rebirth Tesla into the fucking school so everyone can learn how to make electricity out of ethereal winds. But when you think you've got empirical data like that and people are messing around and playing around with things that are going to disturb every person on Earth, and again, prevent people from having a second child, I think that probably the most sovereign thing that we can do on this planet, besides have the right to not be harmed with common law, right? Do no harm, is to bear children, is to have children with someone else, if you're a guy, to protect and raise another soul into this universe, to make them a wonderful, happy, contributing human being. And so to have that particular sovereignty destroyed by, you know, this absolute mental patient, Cortez, and all of her backers, all of her Greendale backers. Ooh, that does warm the blood a little bit, doesn't it? But now let's go to the other side. An opinion. An opinion that we believe is fact. Now again, one of the easiest ways I can compliment every single listener on this show is to tolerate my beliefs and any expression of religion, whether it be the lack of traditional religion or my existential religion that I'm constantly professing on the show. There are Obviously, hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, subscribe to this channel who believe that Jesus Christ existed, came to this world, died for our sins, and is now part of the Holy Trinity that will forge a path to heaven. I respect that 100%. 100%. I wouldn't be totally disappointed if I got to the other side and he said, "You were wrong, dude." Be like, "Oh my God, you're right. High five, buddy." And he goes, "Psych." But churches and methods of believing, how the universe was put together, who your creator is, all that kind of stuff. You got the Catholics, you have the Mormons, you might have Jehovah's Witness, you know, they're all kind of going for the same pot. Then you have the non-denominational, you get the Baptist and the Methodist and Episcopalians and all these different flavors of the same religion, but they don't believe the same thing. Within their congregation, as I always say, not everyone believes the Bible the same way. I think it's a physical impossibility to find two people standing in any one place that believe the Bible identically. Because it depends on how many times you've read it, how you've interpreted it, how old you were when you read it, last time you read it, your experiences in life that prove or disprove its truth in your life. But that's just Christianity. That's the smallest religion. One of the smallest religions on this planet, I should say. And then you have the Muslim nation. You know, and again, Eastern Christianity is different than Western Christianity. Completely different take on all of the original sin and all that. But that's where I get a fair amount of comments, and I have seen a fair amount of comments outside this channel for people that are deathly terrified for my soul. Again, I think at worst, God will just judge me as a human being and make his decision. His intent is sin, nothing else, right? But now those are two fairly rational categories, right? A technical truth that you believe in and you believe someone else is contradicting your technical truth. And then you have this spiritual belief system, which you believe people might be lost and die without going to the afterlife. You don't want to miss them in the afterlife. And so, you know, what would heaven be if your kids didn't come with you? What would heaven be if your loved one didn't come with you? So you start getting worried about that. And at least in those scenarios, when you're crossing the line and perhaps being a lot more offensive than you normally would be in a comment, you got something to at least lean on. We all kind of understand. But I think the one that my friend's talking about the most is this irrational one. And I think it goes something like this. After years and years of the first two categories, one simply gains this dopamine trigger addiction, a lot like a one-armed bandit, right? A slot machine. Boom. Maybe I win. Except in their mind, every time they pull that damn thing, they win. And the only random thing that's going on inside the tumblers for our metaphor is looking up the feed in your social media. Your Twitter or your Facebook mainly, right? Where people can write comments about things that are really related to issues. Instagram's pretty cool because it's just, hey, I took a picture, take a look. It's my life. It's good. But they get addicted. I'm right and you're wrong. That is the formula where it's almost like those fill-in-the-blank stories we used to have as kids. I always forget what the hell those are called. But you just fill in the blank. You know, they said this, I said this, wow, they're wrong. Woof! Give yourself a paycheck, pat yourself on the back. To me, I think what's being revealed with this subject matter can be also metaphorically described as, and only some of you are going to get this, but I think kids today actually do this one little funny thing. But let me tell you, when a word processor came out in a visual GUI form, with a graphical user interface on the Macintosh, and you realized you could write a letter and you could change the font of every word, of every sentence, whatever you want to do, every character in a word, make it look like a ransom letter. You did it. You did all these crazy fonts and you printed it out and you sent it off to all your relatives and you're essentially saying, look at this crazy thing I can do. Well, what did I start this episode out with? A couple reasons that I think are fairly foolish as to why we post on social media. We're revealing our most insecure psychoses when we post. The one that kills me, it's hilarious, are these people that got married fucking 20 years ago, and all they do is post their wedding photos over and over and over and over, like anyone gives a shit at this point. I mean, if you look at their upload photo album, it's like 100 versions of the same exact photograph. Okay, you got married. Great. Now keep it to yourself, would you? I mean, I'm not trying to be a humbug about your marriage, but Jesus, what's going on in your life? Why don't you post something that's happening today? Move on. Move on. Let's go, right? Stop using all those fonts in the word processor. We're way past that in a level of social media maturity. It used to be acceptable to post a photograph of yourself in a profile that's, you know, 20 years old too. Yeah, 30-year reunion's coming up. You post a photograph when you're 25, trying to make everyone feel like you're still of your optimal weight and you got no wrinkles and anything, but your hairdo's all high and wrinkled up and you got an acid wash jacket on. We don't do that anymore, do we? Or whoever is probably not posting much on social media. When I'm going to continue going with a few little examples here because I think this will make sense more about sort of where we go from here. It's most likely painfully obvious to a lot of you. When video games came online, like I just covered World of Warcraft, back in 2004 when it came on, we had kids jumping into communal chat for the very first time in their life, from 9-year-olds to 12-year-olds. And what did they do? Well, a bunch of them from the Midwest went around using racial slurs, sexual orientation slurs. It was every other word out of their mouth. I bet if you visit them today, very few of them would hang on to that. But what happened to those folks? Well, I can tell you by watching them myself, they were kicked out of the groups, kicked out of the guilds, and basically banished. When WoW started to report this user feature, which was very fairly quick at the beginning there, they started losing their ability to log into the game. They got banned. They'd have to start a brand new account under a different name and move in from there. But once you run into those penalties in life, right, you got a bit of an issue. You learn. I put a graphic, I know I put it on the MKUltra Radio Facebook page. I'm pretty sure I've reposted it inside the Deep Thoughts Facebook page. I'll make sure before this episode comes out that it's up there. But it's a funny little graphic I made about Facebook creating this drop-down list that before you post, you have to select why you're posting. And it's sort of this policing mechanism to make sure that you don't make a fool out of yourself. But now, what do the people on the Deep Thoughts Radio Facebook page do that would make me compliment them? When they disagree, they find the most beautiful way to acknowledge in a very friendly voice what the other person's saying. Saying, I heard you, right? That's the first thing that's good. And then very gently bring in their personal experience in most cases, right? And saying, well, you know, what I've found is a little different than yours. Now, maybe a lot different than yours, but they're going to use words like little just to ease you into seeing their side of the game. And then usually with very articulate, specific moments in time, they are starting to break down what is their differing opinion. And what I have found is one of two things with my own personal experience reading their comments. One is, I will change my opinion to their opinion because they did such a beautiful job. But the second thing is actually a little more interesting to, in my opinion. We might find out that when you're piercing more ambiguous subject matter, like let's just say Q, the QAnon phenomenon, right? No one can prove this guy is real. No one can prove this guy is fake. You can't. You can say oh, there's proofs here and there and it sure looks like it. But man, you don't know. The guy's basically reading us the news these days. But as we tried to develop a unified theory about something like him, we have to propose our opinions. And again, if somebody says exactly what we believe on Facebook, we typically like them, like that comment. If we totally, absolutely verbatim love the way they think and the way they said it, we'll put a little heart on there and go, damn, brother, you have the way. I believe what you believe. But now where we need to kind of give and take on things, right? We talk about dreams. What are dreams? Well, you know, we're trying to parse that on this show. What reality are we in? Are we in a computer simulation? Is this really God firmament dome? Are we just an insignificant dot on an insignificant dot in an infinite space on a heliocentric ball? Maybe God doesn't even exist. Those are tough subjects with tremendous gradients, perhaps even ironically infinite gradients in beliefs. But now let's run the scenario. Let's run a case study on what we're talking about here. Somebody posts an article, social media, whatever. In fact, even news channels now have like comment sections down below if you're willing to sign up for their crap. But this thing has got you riled up. You want to express your opinion. You have a definite opinion, which is where you're going in at high velocity. Now, you might be the first person to post. You post your opinion about something, your take on it. I just expressed my opinion of Cortez. Someone else who thinks she's the fucking greatest thing since sliced bread comes in after me. They don't have the same experience I have, and so they have a totally different opinion of her. They think she's hot or whatever, right? And so they go in there and they reply. And now they're angry at me for taking an opposition against one of their heroes. Here we go. We start. Because that's just the first step. There's always a reply button, right? So I have a couple options. I can ignore that post I made, never look back. Someone, you get a notification, somebody replied to your post. You don't even read it. Just leave it. You left your mark, whatever. That's what I do most of the time. But someone comes in and goes after you. I had this happen on a friend's feed about 3 weeks ago. And it was one of those situations where someone was being a complete snowflake. I think it was immigration or something like that. Just being very unrealistic about how many people we can absorb and the money that we have to do things, and that there's any crimes related to anyone coming in from an illegal country, you know, from a country that illegally. And so when I reply, I've got that option. Do I go in as extra strong like they did against me? Or maybe they even replied nice, and I'm going to go, no, you are so wrong. And because I'm so articulate, I can pound you into the dirt 10 ways to Sunday better than you can pound me into the dirt with your limited vocabulary. That happens sometimes, right? And, you know, you can get addicted to that too, right? Watch this. Boom! And you just absolutely fucking destroy them. You may be wrong, but you're so good articulating. Everyone's going, man, you certainly read that person, Riot Act or whatever. That wouldn't be good of me, right? In the past, I have lived at large in that sinful little loop, for sure. And it was by seeing others, after me replying like that, come back in a very gentle voice. Hey, man, I totally understand your passion there. I used to think the same thing. I did this, this, and this to get to your opinion, and I lived in that opinion for X number of days, months, years. But then this other thing happened to me, and it completely contradicted the way that I believed. And so now I'm not so sure, or now I'm totally convinced it's different. So I'm reading that, and it's almost like they're giving me a soothsayer's, you know, pattern of words. Again, language is spelling, right? Casting a spell. And so this was coming on me like a spell. And right off the bat, you can tell from people's really sensible, gentle replies that they're a sweet person. They've got a lot of patience. Maybe they had a horrible childhood and, man, they're just fucking casual as shit. Maybe they've been great their whole life because they had parents that were that way. Regardless, I'm envious, trust me. So what is our motto on the show, right? Rebuilding society from the bottom up. I got to say it every once in a while for the newcomers. This is a big one, in my opinion. This is a big area where we could improve the way we communicate. Now, what if you were to say, okay, how do you neutralize this problem from the very get-go, before these discussions ever happen online? How do you neutralize it? Well, I think the very best way to say it, I may abuse the English language. I think the best way to say it is we get everyone on the same page. We get all of our beliefs to be exactly the same. And then we're good. No one's disagreeing with each other. But now everybody's laughing and everyone's grimacing at the notion of what kind of world would make that happen, right? Is it going to be some goddamn inquisition where everyone's like, you better believe, tell us you believe, we're going to kill your kid or we're going to chop your feet off. Oh, I totally believe. What do I believe again? Oh, that is it. That is the truth. Oh my God. Oh Jesus, get me the fuck out of here, right? But now think about it. We will not have a super mind ray, hopefully, that will reset all of our minds, right? Some matrix situation where they stuff this wire in the back of all of our brains and all of a sudden we're like, ooh, I love Cortez. That probably won't happen. What's the next logical thing we could really do? Well, obviously, communicate with each other. The whole reason for making this episode is that obviously this pattern of I'm right and you're wrong, it is a no-go, non-starter method of communicating. Because it's not only, one who engages in this not only needs to be right, but they need the other person to be wrong. Steve Jobs said a beautiful thing one time when he came back in 1996. I believe the meeting was in 97. He got on stage and he told all these Apple people who were furious that Microsoft Windows had copied the Mac OS without paying them any money. Again, Apple paid Xerox PARC $110 million in stock options to be able to use this GUI interface. It wasn't a freebie steal. And that's one of the biggest fucking myths about Apple. But he says, we are going to do business with Microsoft because the Microsoft Office Suite is absolutely critical for any operating system in the world. You have to have it. And everyone's like, boo, right? And so then he goes and he brings Bill Gates up on the screen in a simulcast. And of course, Bill knew what could happen. So he actually played it pretty cool. As weird as that guy is. But he said, look, they're also investing $150 million into Apple as good faith to help the R&D process. And everybody booed again. In fact, they booed so damn loud that Bill Gates couldn't hear Steve, and so they were kind of like stuck for a few minutes. But Steve, being the consummate genius that he was, he thought this whole thing through before he said a word. He said, look, folks, Microsoft doesn't have to lose for Apple to win. And I have to say, I was sitting there, I think I was watching this live, wherever the hell I was, and I was right there with the audience, just sort of the ignorant mob. Boo, right? I had been programming on Microsoft Windows since 1987 with Windows 2.0, getting the Macintosh product out there called TaxView. I've been supporting the product, trying to get a goddamn printer to work. Plug and play, never was plug and play until Windows 7 Pro, right? So I was all angry. But I heard Steve say those words. And in my lifetime, okay, in my entire lifetime, if I were to pick some of the most profound phrases that changed my attitude and my paradigm of thinking, I'm sure there's others, but right now, that little phrase he said, which I don't know if he's an inventor of it, but was the most ingenious thing to say because it turned my heart immediately. And I was like, you're right. You're right. Because there's that whole thing about, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. Well, we didn't have to join them. But we didn't have to beat them either. We were our own thing, the Apple platform. And believe me, in 97, if you were an Apple fan, you had scars all over your body. This need to be right is a very fascinating thing. Now, I'm going to dive into, because, you know, it's hard to lament about this forever, but I want to show some more examples of where I think that the community of Deep Thoughts Radio has done a brilliant job. Now, when you comment in the comment section of a YouTube video, it's usually fairly standalone folks. There's some folks that know each other, and so they start to kind of high-five each other, which is super fucking cool, man, let me tell you. But when you get into the Facebook group, you start to learn each other's names. And what I find absolutely endearing is that I know I've invited a bunch of my personal friends from Los Angeles into this movement, I guess you can call it that, channel. And then I see a lot of the random folks that have come in from all around the world, And I figure out when I friend them, because I'll friend you guys through my DeepMind account. Any of you want to be my friend on DeepMind, just click it and I'll let you right in. But I'll notice that you're friends with my friends. And I think that's awesome. They're not mine, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you guys have met each other and you respect each other. And even some folks that used to post on the channel a bunch don't post that much anymore, but they still post on Facebook. And they're all my buddies chatting back and forth. That is awesome, right? And it's probably because they found commonalities, not things that they disagree on. The flat earth thing for some people is gigantic. By the way, I just saw this episode on, it's called Beyond the Curve on Netflix. I think some of you guys have been trying to link to that. I don't think anyone likes it. I haven't seen it yet. But for some people, this is huge. If it were flat, then the Bible, the Christian Bible, with a lot of other, Jewish Bibles, Muslim Bibles, or Islamic Bibles, or whatever, the Quran, there's always some reference to four corners of the earth and a flat disk space with the dome. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of references to it. And so people feel very locked into that, that to deny it is to deny God. It's to give the secular science, flying quotes, folks an opportunity to destroy our belief system and our creator. Now, I don't really believe that in terms of, I have never considered until, 2016? I'm not quite sure that this was flat. I mean, I never even had that. I grew up in Kansas with the Kansas record albums always showing a boat going off the edge of the world, which obviously is not the model. But I mean, if someone told me and could prove to me that the world's a tetrahedron, or we are inside of a matrix because they pull up the floor and there's some code down there underneath my carpet, it wouldn't disturb in the slightest my belief in a God. But what I think is interesting about this whole thing is there's going to be those acidic subjects where people are going to come marching in. Of course, if no one sees this episode, which could be the majority of the world, then we're going to continue this sad, sad chapter in man's social development. I think if this little meme went around, this thing I created, if it was starting to be posted in different posts, I'm going to make it, here's what we'll do. We'll have some fun with this. I wanted to make a version of the graphic where each one of the options was selected. And then you can download that to your computer. And anywhere in the world where you think someone is posting for one of these reasons in a foolish way, you just reply with the graphic with that particular reason selected, essentially saying you're virtue signaling, right? That's one of the, I don't think it's in my list, but, you know, somebody loves me. Boom. But just raising the awareness through practice is huge. We get the cream of the crop in the Facebook page for this show, because all of you guys are doing great with each other. And we've had some people come in and be really honored, like I've said in previous episodes. I can't even remember what it was. One kid came in and you could kind of tell he was a little younger. And I think English was his second language, but he was doing pretty good. I don't think I've seen this kid in a really long time, but he came in just guns a-blazing. And our guys were super nice to this person. I mean, guys and gals, right? And I eventually just came in and, you know, I left his comments up there. And I just said, you know, I think you can find a better way of, you know, communicating your thing. And then the guy apologized. And it was beautiful. That kid learned. And maybe he went away just to kind of lick his wounds a little bit so that the next time he comes back, his posts are a million miles down. No one remembers, right? But honestly, I can't remember what this kid's name was. But for me, he gets a star for the day, more so than I do. Because he grew, and that was great. You know, my episode, How Many Wars, will be out before this episode, and it's actually sort of the bedrock of this problem. You know, as I said in the episode's really about, if you haven't seen it, is all about them trying to divide us against each other. Conquer and divide. And as long as they're fighting among each other, then we don't fight against them, the cause of the problem. Remember when that movement came out in the world? It was Random Acts of Kindness. And it was cool because it came out at a time, I'm sure it's surfaced many times in history, but it surfaced again during the internet explosion when we had YouTube to track what happened. I don't even think Facebook was a big deal yet. And people were doing all kinds of wonderful things for people, going up and giving people what they needed. You know, it happens all the time in the world. People who donate food and toys during Christmas and all that good stuff, taking care of homeless people and all that stuff. Like one of the famous ones was a little boy who was giving out sandwiches to homeless people. And I think the cops tried to arrest the kid and the family. Obviously, they're homeless people that are perfectly healthy and they're just lazy and they don't want to work. But there's a lot of homeless people that would take any job you give them. And they're the most gracious, sweet people on planet Earth. They just had a bunch of crap happen to them. You know, sometimes it affects their mind, and so they don't think straight. It's a very tough thing to do. But that was a sort of mechanism by which people converted from looking at homeless people and calling them bums and, you know, like, you're always going to take all the money I give you and go buy booze. That was the thing when I was a kid. But there wasn't a lot of homelessness when I was a kid. When I first moved to Los Angeles in 87, I'm telling you, I have no memories of any homeless people anywhere. And I'm sure they were here, but boy, it was kind of a needle in a haystack. But now, they're everywhere, every town. They've been busted where people, you know, live in nice homes. They actually have jobs or whatever. Some of them make six figures and it's tax-free. They go off to their really nice car, drive to a home. If you're willing to beg for 12 hours a day in the rain and cold all year long. When I go to the Facebook pages of people who live in the big city, I will definitely see this, but it's a little bit less. But in the lesser category of city folk, it's more acidic. The wounds are deeper. The knife cuts all the flesh down to the bone. People are going for it. When I see it in my little hometown and the communities in the Midwest, because everyone has their friendship circles, I see this sort of innocent naivete about how the world works, because I know, coming from a small town in Kansas, they have no grasp of reality. They have grasp of a really good reality where they live, but they don't have experience with friends and family that have lost someone due to a murder caused by an illegal immigrant, you know? When I first moved to Huntington Beach, you know, I was told, hey, this is one of the safest towns in all of California. One of the neighboring towns is called Fountain Valley. Fountain Valley is tucked literally inside of the city limits of Huntington Beach, and then it's bordered by a place called Costa Mesa. So it's super safe as well. Same police force quality, same helicopter, same everything, right? But a close family friend of mine, a woman in her, I believe in her late 50s, lives alone in a townhouse she's lived in for a really long time, has little wiener dogs. And she woke up one morning, walked out her door, and her apartment has like a staircase that goes against the wall up to her master bedroom. And so she has like a big vaulted ceiling in the main room, and she looked down and there was an illegal immigrant, male, sitting in her sofa, watching television. He had been eating all of her food. And this is a woman all by herself. No weapon, unfortunately. The dog starts going nuts. The guy actually was fairly cool because he could have gone upstairs and done something horrible to this woman. He had found her keys to her car, set this whole thing up. He very quietly, without saying a word, because I don't know if he speaks English or not, grabs her keys, walks through the kitchen, walks into the garage, pops the door, opens her car door, gets in, and leaves with her car. 12 hours later, the car chase was over. He totals her car. Come to find out, he had crawled through one of those dinky little bathroom windows and spent the whole night eating her food. I don't think that's ever happened in my hometown once. So now I have this personal experience being in a place that I believe is very, very safe. They did catch the guy. Luckily, the guy wasn't some crazy murderer. So let's thank our lucky stars. At least he had that moral fiber. But this woman was not safe in her own home. I mean, a bathroom window? Come on. Those windows start about 5 feet in the air. He still got in. So now, if that woman knew people in my hometown There's only a couple that will be like, oh, we need to lead all the illegal aliens in. I'm a super Democrat. I'm virtue signaling like crazy, which is this argument I had with this woman recently. And she saw that. She'd be like, excuse me. She has a choice, right? She can get totally acidic and she'll actually be right and the other woman will be wrong. She could go that route and say, look, you have no idea what the hell you're talking about. This happened to me. Bop, bop, bop. Guy in my living room. Stole my car. Totaled my car. Now I got to go file this police report crap. Go buy a new car. Deal with the insurance. Hell, Jesus, who knows if the insurance will go up. But regardless, what if she had something very important she had to do that day? What if her daughter was getting married that day? And all of a sudden she's got this traumatic fucking thing. And imagine you're a woman living by yourself in your late 50s. What do you do to feel secure anymore? Do you realize that you chalk it up to this is a one in a million situation? It'll never happen again. You're not due for that until another lifetime comes around. I think we'd love to feel that way, but we don't feel that way. We feel nervous as shit. Well, this can happen once. Maybe it happens again. Maybe she goes off. Now she's going to buy a $500 pistol. Now she's got this gun in the house. You know, she has grandkids. She's got to worry about hiding the thing. I mean, it just turns into an absolute mess. But if we had a border that could keep everybody out and then turn up legal immigration, have people, good citizens coming in, we know exactly who they are, they have great jobs, they got their own cars, their own houses, no need to break in anyone else's stuff, then it goes down. So that's sort of the flip side of someone being angry at someone else for a very legitimate reason. So we have a tall order, don't we? When you're looking at someone championing climate change, which is going to create draconian carbon taxation based on the most incredible tonnage of lies about how the world's weather is changing due to mankind, we're misleading everything, right? I was recently talking to a friend of mine tonight about the moon hoax stuff, and it dawned on me that she was talking about getting into the debate of the Van Allen belts. And I said, well, the problem with trying to debate anyone in the official science realm about the Van Allen belts is that they've completely lied about what's at the core of the center of the Earth. I'm just going to digress for a fun little second here. They've told us it's nickel alloy in the center of the Earth. Well, people have done the math, done some chemistry, and said, wait a minute, when nickel heats up to 2200 degrees Fahrenheit, it loses all of its magnetic properties. And so you couldn't be creating the Van Allen belts with that particular core to a planet. Why don't anyone try to predict what's in the center of our planet? I don't know. But if you go read about the sun, they'll tell you it's a plasma core. Okay, so we know that that thing has a giant pole coming out of it. We do. We can measure it. All right. So you're telling me that moons and planets have completely different cores than the sun, but they're all creating the same pole around the entire body? It's the same thing, as I always tell you on this show. It's all plasma cores. It's just the way it works. So I mentioned that for one specific reason. We might see the failure in logic of this whole thing. But you can't have two things doing the exact same thing, and then they're completely made out of different things when they exist in the same space, literally, doing the same thing. You shouldn't create two laws of physics because you bullshitted about what was at the interior of the planet Earth first, got your lie in. It was your best guess at the time. Hey, that's fine. No hard feelings. But then later, after you thought things through and you philosophized about what was in the center of the sun, you got it right, at least partially right. But you didn't go back and revise the other theories because that means someone got something wrong. Boy, academics never want to be wrong, do they? Is the moral of the story to be nice to each other? God forbid that would be the idea of it all. I think one of the coolest things I've learned in probably the last 10, 15 years, I have no idea who said it first to me, or if I heard two other people talking about it and I simply overheard. I don't remember. But someone was doing something cantankerous around me, right? Sort of ornery and unnecessary. And this other person said, well, we don't know what kind of day they've had. Maybe they've had the worst day on planet Earth for them, for their perspective of the world. Maybe it wouldn't bother us if we had the exact same day. or maybe we'd be crushed to like little pieces if we had their day, but they're still functional. So really they're kind of heroes for still participating in society in that particular day. But let's say they cut us off in the car. Maybe they're not even trying to, but they're so preoccupied with their horrible day, they're not paying attention. Maybe they say something online that's way more acidic than they should. Maybe they're posting crap that's just nuts. Whatever it is, their communication, interaction with society is less than the best. Let's just put it that way. But whoever said this to me, in front of me, whatever, taught me a huge lesson that was going to take me years. I'm still learning how to really respond with this sensibility inside me, which is maybe I should take a deep breath, count to 10, think this thing through, and see if I can't just let it go past me. See if I can't be a very gentle person if I really need to interact with this person. You know, and again, obviously, bad ideas spread online all the time through posts and comments and all that kind of stuff. Bad ideas to, I guess, those of us who think they're wrong. Part of it might be just let it go. You know, with Facebook, it's very interesting. You sort of have a small click with your Facebook folks, right? But I think that most of us reply on Facebook today in sort of a somewhat guarded fashion in most cases, depending on how secure your life is. How secure is your employment, right? You want to be saying a bunch of super controversial stuff in your feed and your post on Facebook. If on a routine basis you're looking for jobs and people might want to figure out who you are, they go up to your Facebook, take a look, and they're like, oh my God, this dude's nuts or mean or whatever. There's another social media site that's called LinkedIn, which is dedicated to networking with business people. And it utterly baffles me when people take positions that are very controversial on those sites, because it's telling fellow employers and associates, and basically you're building your reputation as a human being in a very exposed way on that site. And I absolutely do not do any of that stuff on there. Luckily, there's not a tremendous amount of conspiracy out there, but you will see like a climate change post, and you're like, oh my God, here we go. But I don't reply. I don't want that out there, right? You know, they always say when you go to dinner, especially those holiday dinners, you're never supposed to talk about two things, right? Religion and politics, because it's only going to go bad in front of everybody else, right? Well, they're right. It's a cliche, but God damn it, they're 1,000% correct. And LinkedIn is your Thanksgiving dinner. Keep that shit to yourself, is my opinion. My advice. Facebook, well, lock it down. Make sure that you have your own little circle. And then discuss it there. With people, hopefully, like our Facebook people, who are well-educated, very articulate. And even if they didn't have a big, giant career in some, you know, form of science or whatever we're talking about, they do a damn good job. And if someone comes in dead empty, but they're super duper interested, they'll let you know, look, guys, I don't have any knowledge in this, but I would love to know. Please dump your opinions right here. And they soon find out there's a lot of different opinions about things, right? So in closing, let's just look at one very interesting benefit of this whole thing with social media. And this might be, I'm not even sure I put this in my Facebook episode, because it happens everywhere. It happens everywhere social media exists, right? For the very first time, man is probably organically dividing into consensuses. Your Christians will find each other. Your Muslims will find each other. Your flat earth people find each other. Your round earth people find each other. People think went to the moon find each other. Hoax people find each other. And we're all engaging in our discussions to try and validate what we think might be true. You know, I have gone after the moon mission several times and I am not finished, right? But I will let you know that I have always been sort of, I don't know, I have a secret little part of me, a little molecule of me that goes, damn it, can't I just find something that makes me believe it? That makes all this horrible footage and bad science and all this unexplained crap and all the earth rocks that are found, you know, taken from the moon, and flip my opinion. And to my dismay, every time I go into it, I find more evidence against it. I find more experts, more smoking guns. And some of the smoking guns are so minuscule, yet smoking guns, that I don't even mention it. Because it's too much in the minutia of life. People aren't going to research it that much. I used to be really hot on this truth movement. Again, I've said this a couple times back in 2005. I wanted to tell the world. And I was hot on, I built a website. I wrote literally 100 blog posts on this thing. And then I did the MKUltra radio with my buddy Kyle. And then what happened was that the snowball kept rolling downhill. And there's obviously tens of thousands of other people doing exactly the same thing, probably way better than anything I've ever done. And so we started this great awakening, the woke people. And then this is sort of how this show started, was that I felt like, okay, that's going. That's its own thing, and it's going to continue going. And now we have extremely dedicated people who have seemingly no job. They can just make videos all day long, and some of them manage to get millions of followers and probably live off their ad revenue. You know, good for them. But we are communicating. We are growing. This problem of being right and someone else being wrong and someone getting a big hoorah out of that, it's going to continue. Again, there's a way of discussing it such you don't fall into the formula of this show. Like I opened with, people who are very gentle in talking about these kind of things. I think that for me, I will infinitely aspire to be that kind of person. Whether I cross some line in the sand that I don't know where it is, but I crossed it, and then suddenly I never, ever, ever commit this sin on society. I hope that happens. I'm not going to hold my breath, right? But I'm going to try every time I get in there. And again, this is one of those examples. By me making the episode, it will be on my mind more so than if I hadn't made the episode. Now, I'm going to give you one more example of maybe how to think about this to get it right. But before I say this, we know that the immature, the neophytes to the internet and to social media are going to have to boil off, right? And usually they're older people who have just made their first Facebook account. They're 45 or over. And then, of course, they're like, I'm going to teach the world all this stuff, right? They're going to come and go constantly. And then, of course, there's the fake news side of it, which knows exactly what they're doing, right? People who pump climate change understand the game they're playing. And then, of course, there's the people that trust them, unfortunately, and repeat the lie. Hopefully we all wake up. But now let me give you an analogy of maybe how to deal with this. If you feel like you've got a really good grasp of the universe and all of its infinitesimal measurements, matrix that you can measure humanity's behavior on, let's say, just for giggles, you are an alien from another world, but you just happen to look human, so you pass from all the other people, right? And you're from a race that is essentially the engineers of society. And you've always been here. And you live and die just like everybody else because you're made of the same thing. But you come to Earth with a privileged knowledge that your people are here. And there's other people who are here for other reasons, and they're strengthening other things. Perhaps they're the people that drop science on everybody. But you're here as an ultimate engineer of mental exchange between two people or more. And so you sort of have all this methodology figured out. You know that if you go in really strong as a I'm right and you're wrong, no one's going to listen to you. But your job as this alien is to be heard, is to be understood. And so, well, let's just say your brain's highly functional. Whereas most human beings have maybe 1,500 words in their vocabulary, you've got 25,000 words in your vocabulary. And you're a master at using it, right? You're using them. And so you're able to go online your first day here. Let's say you're 30 years old. So you just got a lot of training, 10 years of training under your belt. Maybe you've had your brain programmed by some matrix injection to be even smarter than the average bear. You're a super alien that can take on things much deeper, much quicker. And you go on to your first Facebook account. And now you're looking at everybody's comments. And instead of ever being infuriated, you're essentially trying to gauge how much you're laughing inside at some of the funny little archetypes of communication that we have as human beings. And so then it's a cakewalk, right? It's a cakewalk. You can reply to anything. And you just take, as an example, the things that you believe, which may or may not be true because you're not really an alien, and you communicate them very quietly, softly, and they can get totally irate with you, but you know whatever it is you know. And so you go in with a bit of rapport with these people. You gain their respect slowly by always being tender to them. Maybe you realize that they've reached a breaking point, and you throw in a line that just simply says, well, you know what, maybe you're right. I appreciate your opinion. And you leave the thread. Go on to another person. One of the most classic things that kids do with parents, and I always have to remind parents of this because we get stuck in our little microcosms of being parents, is that you'll have a kid who's doing something stupid. And you know it's stupid because you did it when you were a kid. Maybe you didn't do it to the degree they're doing it, and so you're extra afraid because they're going balls out, right? A lot of people smoked weed back in the 70s and 80s, and it was brown Mexican weed, as they always said. And it was much softer on the system. You didn't get so high so quickly. It wasn't the chronic. But now you got kids with legalized marijuana, and man, they're smoking bags of this shit. Like 3 days, they'll be through a half an ounce, right? Whatever the violation might be. It doesn't have to be weed. But you know they're making poor decisions. Now maybe you're lucky and you're a parent that's done the same thing and you've messed up your life at one point and your child's aware of that mess up. And so you can sit him down and say, look, you remember that part of my life I told you about where it all went wrong, right? Well, this thing you're doing right now is a fraction, is like two times as intense as the thing I was doing. So you better be careful. But you'll get into some advice session with your child and your child will start just denying you. Nope, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're stupid. Saying things horrible. That's the way society tells us to raise our kids, right? But here's the thing. Your kids are hearing you, but they just don't want to, in your face, acknowledge that they're hearing you. They want to win because it's a matter of rite of passage, right? They want to prove to you they can take care of themselves, but more importantly, they want to prove to themselves that they want to take care of, that they can take care of themselves. And so they're denying you. They're just being ornery. But very quietly, after you're gone, they heard you. They start looking at cause and effect models because they don't want to really fail. And because you have raised them, and generally they do trust you because of the bond you have biologically or even just through a devoted parental, you know, custodian of their life, they do trust you. And sometimes the kids will start doing exactly what you said, but they'll hide it from you because they don't want you to know that you're right. It's a rite of passage. There may be an element of that that factors into adults who are still trying to prove to the world that they are smart. I have relatives that have this phobia of being wrong. And so they will fight anything I say, no matter what I say. It's just, and they're fucking old, right? They're way older than me, but they just can't let it go. It's a sad thing. I hope that they get through this childhood phase before they die. But I actually think that most of them won't. And so at that point, it's just like reaching the point of no return with someone in a conversation. You just let it go. You just say, well, that's not the person I'm going to try to influence because they're sort of, they've heard your point already. They've heard your counter argument. So if they were ever going to use your data in their life, you would see it already, or you'd see it at least hopefully in the near future. The other one I want to mention just before I close here is the phenomenon where people have been stuck in a circle in their life, but they didn't feel like they had any control. And so when they start getting control, they start feeling elation. And, you know, I had a relative of mine who went to college, got a degree, got a job exactly in that degree, and was actually fairly great at that job, very celebrated by their clients. But then they got married and had to take care of some siblings in the married family. You know, the other guy had some kids. And then she had her own kid. And she did a great job. She managed to take a pretty chaotic situation and make it very peaceful. And everyone fell in love with each other eventually. It was sort of a rough road at first, but eventually turned out to be great. But then she went back to college and she got a degree in art. And then I was at an event and she walked around the event and told everyone that she got this degree. And we were all just super surprised and excited. The weird thing that she said over and over and over was, "See, I'm smart. See, I wasn't dumb after all." Something to that effect. And I remember looking at that situation and kind of going, wow, I never ever postulated in my life that this person wasn't smart or intelligent or whatever. And then when I looked at her artwork, I was utterly blown away by how amazing the artwork was. I was like, Jesus, art runs in my family. Let me tell you, man. But there was this psychosis, this worry about being wrong or about being dumb or whatever. And so this person is extremely tender and never, ever would engage in the things that we're talking about, at least in social media for sure. She'd be more to be quiet if someone disagreed with her sort of thing. But it sort of broke my heart that this person had carried this feeling about themselves for a really long time. Now imagine the person that's a little more forceful popping out of this phase in their life in their mid-50s or whatever, or even older, and suddenly getting this feeling of control. But they lack that social interaction experience because perhaps they've been in their own household for a really long time, or their little circle of life. Maybe they moved out of a little town to a bigger town. Maybe they just start communicating with people from bigger towns. It can be very disorienting. And so I think that my point is in this last comment was there are immature people out there. I'm one of them. And when you see us say stupid things, you can turn on your intellectual superiority, and that's what it is. And you can be gentle and help us understand how to be more like you. Anyhow, I think you feel me. I think this is an important thing to recognize and sort of educate each other on. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. There's audio and video in case you want to switch feeds. There's a locked Facebook group, as I've mentioned several times on this episode. There's now a new Twitter page and a Patreon page for anyone who wants to contribute. For those of you who contribute to the Patreon page, I really appreciate it. Takes care of the cigars for sure. Kind of gives me a little bit of a paycheck for all this work, which is pretty cool. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.